Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, June 21st, 2024. The director of Torit Hospital is calling on Eastern Equatorial State and the National Ministry of Health to rescue the hospital from collapsing.
Sometimes you find the patient is being admitted. We don't have medication, like drugs that are supposed to be given for the patients. So that leads to delays in management of the patient.
And some refugees in South Sudan's Jamjang refugee camp say insecurity is stressing families.
3 days ago, armed people with guns came to us at night and threatened people not to talk or cry. Yesterday, some people came with official uniform, threatened our neighbors, and took all their property and left.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The director of Torit Hospital in Eastern Equatorial State is calling on the national government to support the only hospital offering services to thousands of families in Torit Town. Health workers at the hospital say they need doctors who can treat patients with complicated issues. Kaltuma Vanessa reports for VOA from Torit.
Dr. Mustafa Lokuru, medical director at Torit State Hospital, says families in Eastern Equatorial State deserve good health care.
All the departments in need of intervention. Our people deserve quality life, quality health services delivery, and by meaning that we should have a specialist in each department to carry on the duties perfect without any interruption, and quality service cannot be delivered without a specialist. So currently we don't have even a single specialist, no pediatrician, no physician, no surgeon, no gynecologist. So medical officers are the one taking the role and responsibilities.
Odongi Jackson, a clinical officer at the hospital, says patient management is a challenge at the hospital due to lack of qualified health workers.
Sometimes you find the patient is being admitted. We don't have medication, like drugs that are supposed to be given for the patients. So that leads to delays in management of the patient. Ideally, even the staffs themselves, they also have challenges. That's contribute, of course, to the issues that affecting within the hospital. You find the staff, most of the staffs are volunteers. And being volunteers, the way how they really take the initiative for managing patients, it becomes a challenge.
Torit Hospital patient Janet Ihure is calling on the state government to intervene by improving the standard of the hospital.
Everything in the hospital we buy from outside. The hospital has no drug to treat patients. That is the problem we are facing in the hospital. If you have money, you can go and buy. That's when your patient will get treated. If not, lot of patients have died in this hospital because of no medicines.
Quoting Thomas Pia, Eastern Equatorial State Minister of Health, says the hospital runs out of drugs due to delay in Juba.
Always there is a delay in our procurement processes, but already we have received the communication from the National Ministry of Health, and we are now expecting the delivery of drugs.
Iluk Lucy, a nurse in the hospital surgical ward, says employees deserve to be paid their salaries and to receive medical supplies on time.
Sterile gauzes we don't have, even iodine we don't have, sterile gloves also we don't have. Many things we are lacking in this ward. My appeal, if there will be any way of helping us. As for us here, even we don't have anything like motivation. Now we have stayed for 9 months. We are just helping our people. We don't have anything either, any salary even.
Non-profit partners have been supporting Torit State Hospital, but some of the international non-profit left. The director of the hospital urges both national and state government officials to fund health service in Eastern Equatoria State. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa, reporting from Torit, Eastern Equatoria State.
From health, we move to some refugee stories. Some Sudanese refugees at Jamjang refugee camp say, despite insecurity in areas around the camp, they have started farming to grow their own food using skills acquired during several trainings offered by non-profits on growing vegetables for business. This program called the spokesperson of the South Sudan Police Service for comments about insecurity at refugee camps, but he did not pick our repeated calls. For VOA News, Dennis Longoni reports from Juba.
Refugees crossing into South Sudan from Sudan say they continue to face challenges despite the relative peace in the neighboring country. Ahmed Osman, who arrived recently at Jamjang, says more people are feeling stressed at the camp due to lack of security.
3 days ago, armed people with guns came to us at night and threatened people not to talk or cry. Yesterday, some people came with official uniform, threatened our neighbors and took all their property and left. Also, 2 days back, they came to the farm place and the same thing happened. They threatened people and took everything, even the food to be eaten in the farm.
Sabri Isagal Mani, a father of 5 children, says he is struggling to find a job so that he can feed his family.
2 kilograms of ratio is not enough for people. Frankly speaking, there is no work to do to fulfill the rest of the things. These 2 kilograms of flour finishes in 2 weeks. The rest of the weeks, we borrow from others. And when they give us again, we return and remain with nothing.
The medical friend charity known as MSF is offering services to Sudanese refugees at Jamjang refugee camp. Refugee Saddam Hussein Ali says accessing health services at Jamjang is still a challenge for many families.
If someone becomes sick, it is difficult unless you take him with a bed, because for the ambulance to come from there to here, they give many excuses. If it is a man, they will not come. They will tell you this ambulance was brought for children and pregnant women. So if a man becomes sick, no way. They just take you with their bed. Sometimes you go to hospital and you get no medicine, or they tell you it is a holiday. We are just working for kids, not adult people. So if you become sick, yeah, it is easy for you to die.
Filippo Grandi, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, was at Jamjang camp on Thursday when he urged people to grow their own food. Aisha Adam, a refugee living in Pamir, says she is doing just that.
For the person who is staying home and not cultivating, they find themselves suffering. But for me, who cultivates, I am okay. This year alone, I sold my greens and got 85,000 South Sudanese pounds. Also Korofo, I got 60,000 South Sudanese pounds. And Ridla, 50,000 South Sudanese pounds. This has helped me at home. I bought sorghum and clothes for my kids and helped in many other things. Cultivating greens is good.
William Manuel Kir is Assistant Commissioner at South Sudan Refugee Commission at Jamjang. He says the UN's World Food Programme has promised to provide more food due to the growing number of refugees at Jamjang camp.
The new arrival is still coming in different places, side of Yida, Panakwaj. They allocate some of them from Rang to Jamjang. So the challenge is the food, because now they want to cut, but now they add 2 months, July and August.
According to UNHCR, South Sudan hosts some 330,000 refugees and asylum seekers, mainly from Sudan, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logoni reporting from Juba.
Still on refugee affairs, some Sudanese refugees living in Rang marked the World Refugee Day Thursday by calling on the South Sudanese authorities in Upper Nile State to provide basic necessities. Some of the refugees say they feel at home in South Sudan despite being stressed due to lack of adequate shelter. Mamer Abraham Kwart is in Rang and reports for VOA from that location.
Sudanese refugees and host communities in Upper Nile State marked World Refugee Day in Reng's new reception transit center for refugees and returnees fleeing from Sudan. 43-year-old Sudanese Abdulrahman Hamid says he feels safe after crossing into South Sudan 11 days ago. Hamid says a lack of shelter at Reng's new transit center is stressing out refugees who are homeless in Reng.
We are not facing a lot of challenges. The only challenge that we are facing is the lack of the shelters. The refugees, most of them are staying outside, and the returnees are staying inside the shelters. So it is not like a big deal, but we can solve it. The only problem for the shelters during the rain, the ones are inside the shelters, they are preventing people to get inside.
Rina Carbino is a social worker for South Sudan Women United, a non-profit offering services to Sudanese refugees and South Sudanese fleeing the conflict in Sudan. She says the mental health of some refugees has improved since arriving in South Sudan.
Today is more than the time they come, because now they are sharing happiness, as I can see others smiling. I wish them the happiness all the time, and also I wish if they can always share their psychological problem with us, we can also help them, as we cannot leave them alone.
Many of the Sudanese refugees who turned out to mark World Refugee Day had one message to aid agencies for them to be supported. 42-year-old Hosna Hamin Suleiman, a mother of five, says her children are not in school and she worries about their future.
My firstborn was studying in a school, but when we came here now, he is not schooling, and I can't forget of that because I was looking for my children's future. I am not working, and I'm thinking of how my children should go to school.
Bolger is the field project coordinator of the non-profit South Sudan Women United in Reng, Upper Nile State. He says his organization evacuated over 16,000 Sudanese refugees and returnees from Sudan between April and July 2023. He says his organization and other non-profits will help refugees and returnees recover and rebuild their lives.
South Sudan Women United was present in Khartoum, supporting South Sudanese women refugees when conflict erupted in Sudan in mid-April 2023. As the fighting intensified, our organization received calls from distressed refugees asking for evacuation for imminent humanitarian crisis, including killing, forced recruitment, and rape of women.
On April 15, 2023, fighting erupted between Sudan's armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces, leading to a massive evacuation of refugees and foreign nationals who were trapped in Sudan. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwad, reporting from Reng, Upper Nile State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, military chiefs around Africa are meeting in South Africa. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. After months of expressing anger on social media, thousands of Kenyans gathered in Nairobi and elsewhere this week to protest a bill that would increase taxes to pay for loans and development. Demonstrations that began Tuesday continued into a third day, even as the government scaled back part of the proposed tax increases. The protest Friday went on for hours, and police used water cannons and tear gas to disperse demonstrators who occupied streets in central Nairobi. Muhammad Yusuf is in the middle of the situation there and has this report for VOA from Nairobi.
In Nairobi, hundreds of protesters came out for the second time this week, demanding lawmakers reject the 2024 finance bill, which increases taxes on different sectors of the economy. Some of these high taxes are a result of infrastructure debt owed to China. Hundreds more protested in President William Ruto's hometown of Eldoret and the cities of Nyeri, Nakuru, Kisii and Kisumu. The proposed taxes would increase the prices of diapers, tires, batteries, smartphones and cameras. The government wants to increase the fuel levy by 9 shillings, which the bill sponsors say will be used to maintain damaged roads. The government has also introduced the so-called ecology levy, which it says is necessary to fight plastic pollution and protect the environment. Effie Mwendo is one of thousands of demonstrators who have come out to protest the proposed taxes.
The finance bill is unconstitutional and it is very punitive to the people of Kenya. 65% of women in Kenya cannot afford sanitary towels, and yet they want to tax them. They're telling us that the local brands are what they want us to buy, and yet local brands are not available. Many women cannot afford them already. When they tax them, how much will it be? So they're really trying to mess with our dignity as women, and that one we cannot allow.
The protest Thursday went on for hours, and police used water cannons and tear gas to disperse demonstrators who occupied streets in central Nairobi. Some protesters were not happy with the police presence, which blocked them from accessing the parliament buildings. Diana says she doesn't understand why police were blocking them, yet they are fighting for a better Kenya.
They are throwing tear gas at us. They are fighting us. They are beating us up. We're not at peace. We're just peacefully demonstrating for our country because we love our country, Kenya.
Kimani Mbugua, another protester, said he would fight the bill to the end.
We are supposed to demonstrate. It's a provision in our constitution. I don't understand why the government is actually giving us tear gas and we are here exercising our democratic right. We are here to fight the finance bill because the finance bill is punitive and it must be fought. We are fighting it to the core and it must be rejected.
The Parliament Committee in charge of finance and planning has dropped the proposed taxes on bread, cooking oil and the annual 2.5% motor vehicles and financial transactions. The changes on Tuesday didn't satisfy protesters who demanded the entire bill be discarded, but that protest is unpopular with the ruling party members who argue that Kenyans need to pay more taxes to fund government development programs and loan payments. The National Assembly is expected to vote on the bill next week. Kenyans have vowed to continue protesting as the debate and protests rage on. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we come back here to the United States, where voters in this U.S. presidential election are vulnerable to bad actors, including artificial intelligence, to create disinformation that benefits rival politicians or promotes the interests of foreign governments. VOA Ivan Bosaka looks at the use of IA in elections 2024. In this report, narrated by Caroline Presitti.
Artificial intelligence has already made an appearance in this election, as in this computer-generated photo of Donald Trump hugging infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci, and this fake robocall of Joe Biden telling New Hampshire voters to skip their primary.
We'll need your help in electing Democrats up and down the ticket.
The timing of electoral deepfakes is what makes them so dangerous, says media expert Elaine Kmark of the Brookings Institution.
Even 24 hours before the election, someone puts out a deepfake or a piece of disinformation. It's really difficult. It's really difficult to fight back. And that could, in a close election, it could make the difference between winning and losing.
Rajul Gupta's firm Deep Media helps the Pentagon detect deepfakes, which he says are popular because they are inexpensive and easy to produce.
End to end, it takes about 15 minutes to create a deepfake. There are many free services online. If you want to pay for some of the better ones, a 30-second audio clip is maybe 2 cents.
Attorney and free speech advocate Ari Cohen.
There's been a lot of talk about Russia, but China also, especially as they are fighting in the AI arms race to try and jump ahead.
Cohen says the most sophisticated overseas operations aim to place a piece of political disinformation with influential Americans for them to pass on to others. The biggest U.S. tech firms and social media platforms have promised some voluntary self-regulation of AI in political campaigns, but no federal laws currently govern the practice.
It's very, very difficult to regulate political speech in the United States. The First Amendment protects that core political speech very strongly, and for good reason. We don't want the government putting the hands on the scale, its finger on the scale of elections.
Gupta says much of that difficulty lies in distinguishing between something that is false and something that is a characterization of an issue with which one might not agree. So how are we to know when something is a political deep fake?
And the audio quality is bad, that is a hint that it could be AI generated. It might sound kind of silly or trivial, but actually just looking for those watermarks and being able to find those watermarks quickly in images, audio, and video can, again, filter out a lot. So if you're on a video call with someone and you think they're a deep fake, ask them to spin around in their chair. And if they don't, they might be a deep fake.
Cohen says AI can be used for good in politics. It can allow candidates to reach diaspora communities in their own languages. And it can give campaigns better insight into voter behavior so they can better tailor their messaging. For Ivana Piborska in Washington, Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News.
From Washington, we move to Johannesburg, where defense chiefs from 30 African countries will gather in Botswana next week for a two-day military conference to discuss the continent's security and stability challenges. The meeting, organized by the United States Africa Command, or AFRICOM, will be the first held in Africa since the inaugural conference in 2017. From Gaborone, Mkundisi Dubie reports.
The U.S. Embassy in Gaborone has issued a statement saying the United States will co-host a conference hosting top defense officials from across Africa in Botswana next week. Keynote speakers and panelists will include senior civilian and military officials, according to Lieutenant Commander Bobby Dixon, a spokesman at the United States Africa Command, or AFRICOM.
The aim to tackle the pressing security challenges on the African continent and to find ways to work together for a safer and more secure Africa. From counterterrorism efforts to cyber threats and peacekeeping missions, this conference will cover it all. It's a significant step towards a unified approach in safeguarding the African continent.
AFRICOM says the meeting will build on the success of previous conferences. Last year's meeting held in Rome, Italy, attracted the highest turnout with 43 countries in attendance. Political scientist Jackie Silias at the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria says
it's also evident that Africa faces a series of challenges, and it's not always clear that the model that the U.S. presents is appropriate for Africa. And in recent years, we've seen a variety of coups in Africa, sometimes executed by African forces that have been trained in the U.S., the U.K. and France. And it's also evident that a number of U.N. peacekeeping missions, such as that in the DR Congo and Mali, are withdrawing from Africa, while on the other hand, the role of Russia and the so-called Africa Group is expanding. So it's clear that Africa faces a security challenge and that partners can and should do as much as possible to help with that.
Silias adds that there is a need for the Gaborone conference to come up with effective solutions to the continent's security challenges.
Are we seeing a new model developing where African governments are considering alternative security arrangements, mostly by other African countries? And then, of course, the role of private companies is also increasing. So these events occur at a time of significant shifts in the global balance of power. And Africa is again an area of competition. One hopes that these issues will all be discussed at the upcoming conference in Gaborone and that real solutions will come to the fore.
In March, following its Peace and Security Council meeting, the African Union expressed deep concern over the scale of conflicts on the continent and their impact on socio-economic development. Kwandisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and time has come for us to read comments from listeners about what we are doing well and what we are not doing well. We appreciate all your comments, whether they are good or bad. We start with Samuel Remo Inye, who writes, "Hello, South Sudan in Focus. The demonstration that took place in Bor last week was the last resort to tell the government that people are highly in need of their salaries." Peter Gwoch Anyang Majongdol in Block 3 of Bor Town writes, "As the world commemorates the World Refugee Day, I urge countries engaged in conflict to embrace peace in order to end the fleeing population in search of safety." Ton Mamor Makwet writes, "Dear John and your team in Juba, I appeal to genuine church leaders in South Sudan to pray for the country. Many citizens lost hope. Others are asking why did they struggle to attain independence. God will listen to their prayers and the country will save them." Gamma John Longamere writes, "Good evening and happy World Refugee Day. I appreciate the Refugee Day, even if we refugees have lost lots of challenges. We all pray for last genuine peace in South Sudan so that we can go back. Thanks to the people of South Sudan capital, Juba." James Roy Majok from Unity State, Bantu Town writes, "Hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I'm really worried about peace talks with the holdout groups. It might create another panic with other South Sudan opposition parties who have signed the 2018 peace agreement in Addis Ababa." A listener who calls himself David Balang from Juba writes, "South Sudan government needs to refrain from imprisoning critics at this time as the country is failing because of hunger. Putting everyone in jail who is speaking their minds won't solve the matter. Let them erase corruption and use tax money appropriately to lower the economic hardship in this country. Let them sell out V8s and on V6 vehicles and put money for agriculture. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the management of Voice of America or this program. Keep your comments coming and we shall sample them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, June 21st, 2024. We now leave you with the song Yamiri by JJD Musica.
JJD Musica International. Panasalia Musala.
We have been listening to JJD Musica with that song. Yeah, Mary is singing in his Kakwa native language, so forgive me if I mispronounce the word. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live program from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Killer William, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Samson, Cosimatos, Catolic, and I'm not